One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
There's a reason for mainstream.
Yeah.
You know what mainstream is? Mainstream ideas are why planes don't fall out of the sky.
Yeah.
And there's more in common there than you want to admit.
Yes, want.
Because the tribalistic ways are so satisfying.
Thank you so much for coming on the show, Neil.
Daisy, I don't know any Daisies in my whole life, so now you're the first.
And now I'm the first.
I know. Was it a cow named Daisy, I thought.
That's right. Classic. They have a Beanie Baby Daisy cow.
Oh, that's okay.
Yes.
All right.
So do I call you Dr. Tyson or do I call you Neil?
You call me Neil.
Okay, I'll call you.
Or if you must, you can say Dr. Neil.
Dr. Neil.
No, Neil is my name.
Yes.
Yeah, I eschew titles.
Oh,
such as doctor, professor, because it implies that you must listen to what I say because I have a title.
You don't like the intellectual elitism?
Correct. What I find is that if you address someone with a title, it implies that whatever they say next must therefore be true.
Mm.
And when that happens, it means they haven't earned your trust in what it is they say is
right.
True. And I want to earn that by telling you things. You say, "Wow!" You're gonna say, "Wow!" Not because you're just believing me, but because you have come to understand it yourself, and you take ownership of the knowledge. And as an educator, that's my goal. So that forevermore, whatever you learn today, you're not gonna say, "This is true because Tyson said so." You're gonna say, "This is true because I know why it's true, and here's
Neil
the explanation."
Convinced me.
No, I twisted your arm hard enough. No, because I gave you enough rational tools.
Mm-hmm.
Your toolkit was empowered to make the decision on your own for you to judge what is true and what isn't.
Right. Okay. So you want to establish more of a conversational ethos than having just the prerequisite.
That's the way better way to say what I just did. Conversational ethos. Yes, I'm good with that.
You're good with that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I want to talk a lot about like the chicken or the egg debate.
People are still debating that?
They are.
It's not a debate.
That's what I think too.
No, it's not a debate. It's very clear and simple. The egg came first.
I agree.
It was just laid by a bird that was not a chicken.
Okay, well, here's where we...
Now, of course, that compresses, you know, hundreds of thousands of years of evolution.
Yes.
But philosophically, there is a bird that you perhaps would not call a chicken.
Yeah, proto-chicken.
Yeah, proto-chicken, sure. Yeah. And then there's a genetic alteration, which occurs in every generation.
Right.
Very tiny genetic variations. And the egg that comes out of it, you would say, that's not a proto-chicken, that's a chicken.
Okay, so here's where we differ on this, and I'm open to changing my mind. Of course.
As so many people aren't.
Yes, well, I try to be. I'm okay with being wrong.
If you convince me, I'll go ahead.
Mm-hmm. So to me, the debate is it's two-pronged, like chicken or the egg. The egg comes first just because eggs as a concept are millions of years old. They predate chickens in general.
That's not why I think that's true, but that's also true.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. also true. So like that's like one thing that I think people get caught up on.
There were eggs way before they were chickens.
Yeah, eggs way before chickens.
Mm-hmm. You know what an egg is?
A cell.
No, I was going to be more metaphorical.
Oh, okay. What's an egg? What's an egg?
This is not a biology class here.
I'm sorry.
Okay, you know what an egg? An egg is a spacesuit for the unborn organism so it can survive in an environment that would otherwise kill it.
Yeah, it is.
Until it can survive, then it no longer needs the spacesuit.
That's true.
Think about that.
I've never thought about it that way.
Yeah.
That's cool. Neil.
Right? So the chicken is inside the egg because the outer environment can't live in that
right.
environment. So it stays in there until it's ready. Then it pops out and it can...
It can lead the ship.
So a spacesuit for us is what we need when we are in a hostile environment.
Yeah.
But we're not going to, we're not a chrysalis to become. We're not gonna pop out of the spacesuit and say, I can now breathe the vacuum of space. No.
Right.
But
that'd be cool, though.
But I think of it that way. And at least initially, until we fully terraform Mars, mm-hmm. we'll have various levels of spacesuits mm-hmm. to enable us to live there until it's fully terraformed. And then we have full oxygen and everything else that we don't have to worry about.
Just walk right out.
Walk right out.
Look at a Martian sunrise.
Exactly.
Enjoy our day.
Exactly. And Mars turns once every 24 hours or so.
Does it?
Yeah, and it's tipped on its axis, so it has seasons the way we do. Oh. That's why Mars is the joint. I mean, do people still say that?
I
have permission to say the joint.
Listen, you have permission to say it because TikTok is creating all the trends, and that's my platform. So now
I'll retrend. It was the joint.
Guys, okay. It was the joint.
That's very 35 years old, but that's how old I'm old. So,
35 is very young, Neil. You're young still.
No, 35 years ago that I remembered that and used it. So I'm that much older than 35.
Well, you can't tell, Neil. You look great for your age. You look very handsome. And I think when you said it, you brought it back.
I brought it back. So now I forgot what I was talking about. What was I talking about?
You were talking about how Mars is the joint because it...
Oh, yeah. Because you can't go to Venus, even though it has... Its gravity is closer to that of ours. Mm-hmm. And it's called our sister planet because of this the similarity in size. But it was called our sister planet before we learned what the temperature was.
And then we're like,
900 degrees Fahrenheit. Maybe not. And I calculated you can cook a 16-inch pepperoni pizza on the windowsill in 3 seconds.
In 3 seconds?
Yeah, 3 seconds. About right.
Oh, so like
Arizona. If you want a little crispy, 4 seconds. But you would vaporize, but ignoring that complication, naturally, you would enjoy
you would
a pizza.
Have a pizza, though.
Fast ordered pizza.
You were the pizza.
In fact, they wouldn't have to pre-cook it. They would deliver it, pull it out, ring the doorbell, and in the time it took you to answer, it's cooked fresh.
Like an alien DoorDash.
Yes.
Yes. Could be incredible. Elon Musk, get on.
The problem is you can't cook things that are not thin.
What do you mean you can't cook things that are not
thin? I said pizza very specifically.
Okay, what happens?
You can't roast a turkey.
Well, why not? That's something I would want.
Oh, because you can only heat the middle of the turkey as fast as the turkey, as the outer layer of the turkey can tell the inner layers that it's got hotter.
Got it. So.
Okay. So the outer layers gets really, really hot. In fact, it vaporizes. But in the other next layer says, okay, I guess I'll up a few degrees. And the one inside, I guess that's why you measure the inside temperature of things. Because that's the last to know that it's in the oven.
So you get some sort of terrible like leftover burnt on the outside.
Yeah, it'll be completely singed on the outside and basically uncooked on the inside. So you need something thin so that there's hardly any middle.
That's
why pizzas work perfectly for this analog.
Okay, so like naan bread also?
Naan would be great. Cookies.
Cookies.
Yeah, any thin thing that goes in the oven.
Tortillas
too, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, all the flatbreads.
All the flatbreads.
Totally work, yeah.
Okay, flatbread is like one of my favorite things.
Okay.
I'm down.
There it is.
Venus, here I come. Sacrificing myself for the flatbread.
Plus, early movies always imagined that Venus was filled with beautiful women. Because Venus, the goddess of love and beauty and all that. And there's a little side fact to this. I know we're way off track
back. I believe in us.
You'll totally get back to the chicken egg.
I
want to hear your argument that opposes mine. I totally want to know it. But with Venus, you realize the genitive form of Venus, okay? Generally today we'll say, if you are of Venus, you are Venusian. And if you're Mars, you're Martian.
Martian.
And if you're Earth, you're Earthling. This is the sort of thing.
Earthling is ours?
You didn't know that?
No, that sucks compared to
it does.
To other
it's not
ones.
As fun.
It's not as fun.
We're not Earthians or something. Yeah.
It could be better. There's room for improvement.
Earthling. So we're Earthlings, as any alien knows.
All
the visiting aliens,
Neil,
have
that's
the encyclopedia.
Why they're not coming to us because we're called Earthlings. We need a cooler name to attract people.
So we have Martians and Venusians, but Venusian is the improper word.
Really?
Okay. The proper word, if you are of Venus, is venereal.
Venereal.
Yes, and doctors got
like
to that.
Like the disease?
Doctors got to that word before the astrophysicists did.
That's
so they
right.
found a class of diseases that are common to lovemaking because Venus is the goddess of love and beauty and all that goes with it. So they call that entire class of diseases venereal diseases. So, in fact, the Russian landers on Venus, they're called Venera. Venera 1, Venera 2. So the Venera root exists elsewhere, but we wouldn't touch it. Because if someone comes from Venus and says, hi, I'm venereal, what are you?
You're like, ew.
Yeah, yeah. So we say Venusian just to cover, just to sweep that under the rug.
To avoid it.
Yeah.
What if aliens came to Earth and we found out, like, they call their diseases, like, Earthling diseases? And they're like, we don't really want to change it, though.
Yeah,
we're
not going to shake your hand on this one, no.
We're worried about you guys, actually. It's a negative stereotype.
As they should be at the end of the day.
Okay, what do you think about that? Like, you...
What?
Aliens.
I want to still hear your egg.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, I'll get into my egg.
You went off on an off-ramp.
I really
I went on the off-ramp, and you went on an off-ramp.
I ran
right
after you.
Yes,
I was happy
you on the double off-ramp.
Yes, the double off-ramp.
Go.
Okay, so...
Oh, speaking of off-ramps?
What?
No, I'm sorry. I'm reassociating now. I'm sorry. This is your show. You.
It's our show today.
Our show?
This episode is our episode.
Okay, so have you ever seen off-ramps to freeways? Where are you based?
Indianapolis.
Indianapolis.
Yes.
You all know some cars.
That's what I'm saying.
That's what I'm saying. Okay, so off-ramps, have you noticed they have grooves in them?
Yes.
Okay. That's to prevent you from sliding off.
Makes sense.
If the road is a little bit slippery because it just rained or whatever. They groove the off-ramp, a curved off-ramp. Mm-hmm. So you say, who invented those grooves? That's brilliant. It's simple and brilliant. NASA did.
NASA.
All right. Why? Because the space shuttle, which comes in for a landing, does not have engines. All right. It is a glider as it comes in for a landing, and it's got a parachute, and it's got some brakes, but it's really got – so if there's a crosswind, that's hard to fight that. So those grooves help it stay on track because it doesn't matter how you come in. The photo at the end shows how good a steerer you were. If you're, like, crooked on the runway
– they're like, look at that parallel park.
The photo – caught that. So some clever engineers decide if you groove it, then the shuttle can stay on course more tightly. And that was then borrowed for the freeway system. What my only point of this is, you can say, well, anybody could have thought of it, but no one did. Right, yeah. Right. There's things that come out of NASA, like you see the airplane tips that all look like this now, that came from NASA. They all just... They didn't just decide to do that because it looks cool.
Right.
The first A in NASA, you know what it stands for?
The first A? No. What is the first A?
NASA has two A's in it. You never thought about what... You never spelled it out?
No,
you just pronounced NASA your whole life?
Yes. I used to live in Texas, so I would go to Houston and
you
be like...
You should know.
NASA.
Right, you should know. National Aeronautics and Space Administration.
Okay.
The A's are aeronautics. A big part of their budget studies aeronautics.
Yeah.
The efficiencies of wings and airflow and wind tunnels, now often done digitally on a computer. Mm-hmm. And they discovered that at the wingtip, there's turbulence, that which always slows you down.
Right.
Turbulence is never good. So you'd lift up the wingtip, and then the turbulence then becomes more laminar as it does
like
that.
A sports car.
Well, sports car's a whole... We can talk indie cars. But I want to hear your eggs.
Okay, eggs. All right. So my opinion on what came first, the chicken or the egg, when it's the question of what came first, the chicken or the chicken egg, is that the chicken came before the chicken egg, purely because in chicken eggs, there is a protein that is present from like an enzyme that only chickens produce. So therefore, a chicken would have to predate the chicken egg. Whereas,
well, that's how eggs are now.
Yes, yes.
But at the point when someone would have said, a little chicken came out of that egg, would it have had that enzyme?
No, and therefore...
Well, how do you know?
They apparently, it's only something that happens. That's true.
They. Is this some other TikTok channel?
No. It's a somewhat recent...
What is your they hierarchy
okay,
here?
That's fair.
Right.
There was a somewhat recent study about how the enzyme in chicken egg shells is only produced within a chicken's womb. And so presumably if there was a proto chicken, it wouldn't be produced. So the first chicken that was actually born from two proto chickens was a chicken that happened to be born from an egg rather than a chicken being born from a chicken egg, in my opinion.
Okay, but it would have still been born from an egg.
Yes, yes. But that's why I have to tweak the question to what came first, the chicken or the chicken egg.
No. Your chicken with the enzyme would have still come from... been hatched out of an egg.
Yeah.
Because the enzyme would have been the genetic variant.
Just not a chicken egg, though, right? An egg that happened to produce a chicken.
Oh, so what you want to say, I get it. What you're saying is, what came first, the chicken or the chicken egg?
Yes. Because when you ask what came first, the chicken or the egg, obviously the egg.
But in a zoological, anthropological sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. So now you want to get into the
semantics.
I got to think about that. I'll give you my verdict by the end.
Okay. I'm happy with that. I'm happy all that right. You have to mull at least. I'm feeling good about
it. Let me think about it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Neil.
Okay. All right, what other conundrums have been troubling you?
You sent me reeling.
And your followers.
You sent me reeling specifically the other day, actually.
Which, oh, really? Okay.
Yes.
Because you started it. When you invited me to this, you said, I need you to settle the chicken egg thing. Well, there's more than just a chicken egg conundrum out there. And
there's
I sent
many.
You a couple more. You pick from them. I don't know what your people want to hear.
All of them, because the one that specifically sent me reeling, okay,
mm-hmm.
is when you said, like, we can talk about what's north of the North Pole. And I was like, I would love to know what's north of the North Pole. And so I was reading your book because I was like, maybe it's going to be in there. And then I was like, I still don't know what's north of the North Pole.
Yeah.
And so then I was trying to look it up so that I could be prepared, what's north of the North Pole.
Yeah.
And every time I looked it up, it said nothing. And I was like, that can't possibly be what Neil wants to talk about. And so then for like 10 minutes, I had like a breakdown where I was like, I need to figure it out.
Wow.
And I think I did, but I maybe didn't.
Well, by the way, I admire the fact that of all things that could send you into an emotional breakdown, it's just a deep philosophical question that accomplishes
that's
this.
Usually what gets me.
That's be proud of that.
Thank you.
It's not a lost boyfriend or it is a deep thought.
It is, where I'm just like,
that leaves you crying in your soup or wanted to dip a cookie in more milk.
Yes.
Just to recover.
Literally. I kind of almost cheated before I figured it out. I called my dad, and my dad works at Stanford. He's a chemist. I was like, do you know the answer to this? No. He was like, I mean, nothing. And I was like, oh my God. And so then I was like, I was like, I'll call you back. And
okay.
I got off.
All right. So consider a couple of things. Very important here.
Yes.
Just because you can sequence nouns and verbs such that it forms a question.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean the question has any meaning or validity at all.
Neil, okay.
Okay. I just want to establish this. I'll give an example.
Okay.
At what temperature does the number 7 melt? That's a perfectly legitimate question with nouns and verbs and an inflection at the end with a question mark, but the question makes no freaking sense. And people, you know enough about our world to not ask that question.
Right.
Okay,
right.
I got another one for you. What would be, how far do you have to walk? Mm-hmm. I'm assuming you embrace the discoveries of space exploration.
I do.
How far would you have to walk on Earth's surface to fall off the edge?
You would never fall off.
You would never fall off.
Yes.
You know to not ask that question.
Yeah.
First, because you're not a flat earther. But
correct.
Second, you know to not ask that question. So once you recognize how we have defined north.
Right.
You should also know to not ask the question, what's north of the North Pole? Because the question does not exist in the system we have set up. A deeper one than that is, here's one that's freakier than that. You ready?
Okay.
Are you prepared?
So.
I don't know.
I
you
think
seated?
So.
Okay.
Can I?
You need, okay.
All right.
A deeper one than that is, right now we are in the Eastern time zone.
Yes.
If time zones were divided evenly, which they're not, because they're divided politically, culturally. Like, for example, the mountain time zone, nobody cares about the mountains. There's like 80 people, you know, 5 people live in the mountain time zone.
They're like, this is very important to me.
I had a comedian who said, the reason why they don't give mountain time for TV broadcasts, they says, 8 p.m., 7 central, or they don't give mountain time. It's because they would just be giving it to Steve. it's a mountain time.
That's true.
But anyhow, so mountain time is thinner than it would geographically otherwise be. Mm-hmm. And Eastern time is much wider than its native width would be on a world. Mm-hmm. But if it were divided evenly, they'd be 15 degrees wide. Mm-hmm. Okay? If you do the math, 15 degrees times 24 time zones mm-hmm. gets you 360 degrees. You'll have...
Okay.
We got this.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. I think I did that right.
15. I'm dyslexic. I can't tell you.
24. 4 times 5. 20. I think. 3. Yeah, I think I did that right.
I believe in you.
Okay. Anyhow, so that's our time zone. Now, you may have noticed, if you look at a globe, mm-hmm. that the lines of longitude that separate out your degree time zones, the lines of longitude, as you get near the poles, they come closer together. Mm-hmm. Ooh, so you don't have to travel as far to go from one time zone to the next because they get narrower and narrower. It turns out most of the Earth's population lives between, like, 50 degrees north and 50 degrees south. So this problem is not much of a problem for nearly every human being on Earth.
Right.
But as you get near the North Pole, all lines converge to one point. So the question is, what time is it on the North Pole?
No time or all time, right?
That's as good an answer as any.
Nice.
It is all time on the North Pole, okay? It's always happy hour on the North
Pole. That's what Santa Claus says.
So that, to me, that's a more intriguing fact mm-hmm. than what's north of the North Pole, because we've endowed so much of our lives with an awareness and an understanding of what time it is. Mm-hmm. Then you get to the North Pole and asking what time it is has no meaning at all.
Right.
So we've set up the grid system so that that question has no meaning. You think it has meaning because it has meaning down here. New York is 41 degrees north. So I'm just saying you can set up systems, worlds, uh-huh. where certain questions have no meaning.
Okay, so when I was reading that question, I thought you asked me a trick question because the conclusion I came to was either if you're looking at the magnetic north, which is in the south, everything is north. But if you're looking at the geographical north and then you take a step in any direction from that point, you're moving south.
Okay, I have to explain to everybody what you just said. Okay.
And so I was I got it.
So you knew. Do all your people know what you just said?
No. So you do have to explain it
okay,
to them.
Okay, so you have a compass. Does anybody know what a compass is anymore?
Yes.
There's a needle. The north pole of the compass points north. Mm-hmm. Okay? But wait a minute. You remember from childhood magnets, opposite poles are what attract. Mm-hmm. So if the north pole of a magnet points to Earth's north magnetic pole, that can't be our north pole because it's the north of the magnet pointing to it. Our south magnetic pole is actually in our geographic north of
yes.
the Earth. So that's what you slipped
yes.
that in there.
Yes.
That shows a lot of awareness of the physics.
I try to prepare.
Go for it. Give me a fist on that. All right. So your hands are freezing.
I know. What's my circulation is terrible.
What's with that?
It's terrible. It really is. It's always
okay.
been.
So, and the North Pole, by the way, moves because it comes from what we call a dynamo phenomenon deep in our core. Mm. We have mostly iron in our core, and iron is conducts electricity. And when you have electricity, you also have magnetic fields. And so anytime you have a molten core, you have a magnetic field, but that magnetic field is not stable physically or even in its intensity. So ours is currently dropping in intensity and it's headed, when I grew up, because how old I am, it was in the northern Canadian provinces and it's been headed north since then. It's past the North Pole and it's headed towards Siberia.
Interesting.
Yeah, so Putin will very soon own the North Pole.
Oh, no. This is terrible news.
Just what you want.
Just what you want.
Strong man.
America's nightmare. That's actually so funny, though.
Did I give you other questions? What other one you have?
The other one, I really love this one, was what do you do when Pinocchio's nose doesn't know what to do? And I got a lot of insight.
Well, that's not how I asked it.
Well, yeah, you asked it.
Way cooler than that.
Yeah, say how you asked it.
It was, if Pinocchio declared, my nose is about to grow, what would happen?
It would likely have to grow, right? Unless he's
wait, wait. Then he that meant he was telling the truth.
Yeah. So then,
but when he tells the truth, it's not supposed to grow.
And so then, okay. I was thinking about this question in a completely different way. With that, does it splinter? Perhaps. You know, like, does it get an offshoot? Can it grow? Because at least in the animated series, his nose turns into a tree at some point.
Yeah, there's
so maybe
twig, the twigs that grow off
have
of
an
it.
Offshoot of deception.
I don't know if that if the rule book, you know, judges
allow for it.
Judges. So no, that's another example of a question that has no meaning. It's not a paradox or anything. The question, that sentence, would never be uttered by Pinocchio in his universe.
Right, because he can't say that, right?
Yeah, it doesn't exist as a legitimate sentence.
It's not on the table.
It's not on the table.
It's not conceptual.
Correct. The rules of his universe don't allow that question. That is right. The answer to that question. It's always a paradox because if one is the other and one is the other, so we don't know.
It would just never happen.
Question does not exist.
Okay.
By the way, another fun thing about the North Pole, before we leave that subject, if you're on the North Pole and I say, go due south, a mile.
Right.
Then I say, go due west, a mile.
Right.
Then I say, now go due north, a mile.
Right.
Where do you end up?
Do you end up back where you started?
Because yes, you do.
Because everything is like a triangle.
Yes!
I'm feeling smart.
Yeah! You just made a triangle.
Yeah.
And because the space... mathematically, it's non-Euclidean space. Mm-hmm. It's curved space. And on a curved space, you can make right angle turns and you won't make a square.
Yeah, you'll still be a triangle.
That's right. In fact, if you make a line from the North Pole to the equator, mm-hmm. and then you come around, and then you go at a 90-degree angle all the way around, and then you make another 90-degree angle back, you can have three 90-degree angles and you'll make a perfect triangle on a curved surface, on a sphere.
Nice.
Yeah, the non-Euclidean geometry, that's part of that.
I love that.
Yeah. So there are a lot of fun questions like that out there, but just recognize that they don't require an answer. People say, what is the sound of one hand clapping? And they want you to think that that's a deep question.
Mm-hmm. And you just think it's a ridiculous question.
No, you can say, well, you're pressing air molecules, mm-hmm. and that will make some vibration. So that would be a sound.
Really,
that's not what anyone really means when you say that. They want you to get deep and philosophical. And I would declare that a lot of the questions that are passed off as deep and philosophical just simply have no meaning.
Are just BS questions.
Right. They're great, you know, 2 hours into the happy hour. And you just need something to think.
To just chat about. Just food for thought.
Yeah, just to, you know, to believe you're having deep thoughts, which you never do when you're under the influence.
True.
Right. You put chemicals in your brain and stir them and believe you are more closely connected to nature. Our senses barely work as they are.
Yeah, that's true.
They barely communicate objective reality.
Yeah.
Let's stir in some chemicals and see how much deeper into the universe we can get. No, you'll get deeper into something else, but mm-hmm. objective reality is not one of them.
Right.
Yeah.
You're going to be less present, maybe.
That's correct.
You know?
Now, some people say they might get some ideas from these places.
Right. The creative process can certainly be jump-started, I think, for some people.
I suppose.
You know?
Okay.
Not
but
for me.
I tested this and it didn't work.
It didn't work for you?
I tested. Can I tell you how it tested?
Yes. Okay. I'd love to hear.
When I was early in my writing days, mm-hmm. I remembered all these stories about these writers that have a drink, you know, like Hemingway, some kind of highball drink, and you need, and then you write. And that was like.
It'll get you.
It'll get you. That's how you do that. So I don't really like hard liquor, but like wine, good wine. So I said, I'm going to have a wine glass. And I drink the wine. Oh, yeah, this is good. This is good.
Like, I'm vibing.
Yeah, vibing. I'm being the wine, and the words are flowing, and the ideas. And I published it, and then I forgot about it. And later on, I would not do it, and I'd write. Now, unless I just simply got better, mm-hmm. I'd look back at what I thought was brilliant writing and it was just kind of average or below average for my other writings when I was not under the influence. So it's a complete delusion. At least it was for me.
That makes complete sense for me because when Kylan and I were first dating, he had like a deadline.
His boyfriend over there in the corner?
Yeah, my boyfriend in the corner.
Okay.
He had a deadline he couldn't meet, and I said I would write his paper for him, which because I was trying to be nice, but I forgot that I agreed to do that. And then I had drank a little bit.
Oh.
And then I was like, oh no. And we were early in dating, so I didn't want to disappoint him and not write the paper after I said I would.
That's a deal breaker right there.
I know. Well, because I was like, I'm going to look inconsistent.
You
I can't
promise
do
your
this.
Man you're going to write a paper and then you don't.
That's what I'm saying. And right. I was like, you know what? It was on The Truman Show, which I like that movie anyway. So I was okay. like, it was going to be a fun paper. But I wrote it and I thought I killed it. And
at the time.
Yeah, at the time. Uh-huh, uh-huh. I thought I killed it. It is his worst grade he ever got in his academic career. And I was like, no, I promise I'm good at writing papers.
Yeah,
like,
apparently not. Oh, yeah. And so the issue is, it'd be something different if you're writing and you say, this really isn't good. Yeah. Then at least matches reality.
Yeah.
But if you think it's even better.
I thought it was awesome.
Awesome, right.
I thought it was killer. Therein I was like, he's going to get a 101 extra credit. It's going to be great. He got like a 50.
A 50?
Yeah, it was terrible.
Ouch.
I've never even gotten that bad on a paper before. And ouch. I was like, oh my gosh, I should have just bailed. It made me look way worse.
Okay.
Luckily, he's very forgiving. Chose to look past him. I was like, oh my goodness. They let him make it up.
Yeah, so that's, so I think about how the mind works all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Can I tell you another little thing related? It's a slight off-ramp.
Go ahead.
Again, you have a steering wheel here.
Yeah, I think so far I've done a good job getting us back.
Okay, good. So, what was I talking about? We were talking about the brain?
We were talking about the brain, how alcohol inhibited your writing experience.
And how you, I was just there. A moment ago.
It doesn't get you closer to nature
to an objective reality. It's just not there. No, we have to change subjects.
Okay, but can we talk about objective truth really quick?
Oh, yeah.
Because I really, it resonated with me what you were saying about objective truth.
Okay.
You had one
That's
quote.
In the book.
Yes, it is in the book.
Okay.
I read it.
You read the book.
I read the book. Yes.
Wow, nobody ever reads the book when you're on a show.
I read the book.
Excuse
okay.
me.
You have a quote. I wrote it down and everything
Go.
That I really liked where you said, truths are more beautiful than untruths. I really liked that. I thought that was very profound, Neil.
Well, I think I've had a maybe at the beginning of that sentence.
You may have.
I gave examples.
You may have had maybe.
And I said maybe it's because truths are more beautiful than untruths.
Yes.
That's in the chapter on truth and beauty.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is in the chapter on truth and beauty.
Yeah. That all the books of that chapter are topics that people have argued over. Mm-hmm. And some we've especially argued over Thanksgiving dinner.
Mm-hmm.
There's a chapter in there, law and order. Gender and identity,
yeah.
Color and race,
yeah.
Meat eaters and vegetarians,
yeah.
Oh yeah, I went there.
Yeah, you had to. I think that's a good conversation.
Yeah, so I went to those topics because I can shed light on them.
Mm-hmm.
That's a cliche, but I mean that I can shed cosmic light on it
mm-hmm.
because first they look different if you're scientifically literate,
right?
And they look especially different if you come to it from above. From, mm-hmm.
a cosmic perspective,
as any one of my colleagues and I think daily mm-hmm. when we confront challenges or issues or strongly held opinions that might not otherwise be justified if you simply analyze it from afar.
Right. Because you started your book with you had a quote from one of the Apollo astronauts where he was talking
Apollo
about,
14.
Yes, Apollo 14. He's talking about, I thought that was a perfect like thesis quote.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, after that quote, you don't need to read the book.
Yeah.
Can I recite the quote?
Yes, you can.
May
I would love you to.
Okay. Edgar Mitchell.
Yes.
And I thank his daughter for giving me permission to open the book with this quote. Because he passed a few years ago. He says, you develop an instant global consciousness, a people orientation, an intense dissatisfaction with the state of the world, and a compulsion to do something about it. From out there on the moon, international politics looks so petty. You want to grab a politician by the scruff of the neck and drag him a quarter million miles out and say, look at that, you son of a bitch.
Incredible, Neil.
Ooh.
I love that quote. I love the way that you said it. That's the way I was
reading it. You got to feel it.
Yeah, it's got an umph to it.
You got to feel it.
And it's also such like an undeniable truth, even though I haven't been to space.
Yeah, yeah. And here's and by the way, that's not just the overview effect, which an astronaut would get in low Earth orbit, mm-hmm. which is not very far from Earth.
Mm-hmm.
It just isn't. A couple hundred miles up. You got to like leave Earth mm-hmm. for another destination. Then Earth recedes in your rear view mirror. Actually, I don't think the Apollo capsule had a rear view mirror. Roll down the window and take a look at it. Get a shot of that before we get too far. So, you look at it, and there it is, suspended in the void of space. And you see it not as the schoolroom globe would have you think of it. You see it as only nature intends, with oceans and land and clouds. And that juxtaposition, that's our home.
Yeah.
And we're all the same species. Yet, I think of, in there, I throw in an alien, ask, but what would an alien say about mm-hmm. this? Because they don't have any preconceived notions right. of who or what
There's
we
no
are.
Cultural relativism.
No cultural bias, right? Mm-hmm. They just come and say, oh, how you guys doing? Wait, this is land all over Earth, right? Yeah. Well, you drew a line over here, and what? You have to show papers by an authority to cross that line? Why? Oh, wait, you're at war over here because you're worshiping a different god or no god? What? Oh, you're at war over there because of who you want to love versus over here? Oh, you're doing what? Oh, their skin color reflects light differently than their skin color? You're doing what? You're enslaving them? You're killing them? You're corralling them? You're what? The aliens, you know, they'll run home and say, there's no sign of intelligent life on Earth.
Absolutely.
That's how they will react.
Full of contradictions.
You know this.
Yes.
Right.
They may have already reacted, though.
know. That's why
that's why they're not here. That yeah, and said, us being
I'm
called.
I'm not coming near this place. Plus, they see all the space debris that's yeah. orbiting the Earth.
They're like trash planet.
Trash planet, right.
Earthlings?
They can't.
Ew name.
Ew name. Ew behavior. Leave them alone.
They seem hostile, honestly.
Let them decompose in their own stench.
Dark, but real.
I know. That was darker than it normally comes out of my mouth. Sorry.
Well, sometimes I have that effect on people.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Oh, I had a question for you as well.
Yeah.
Philosophically, would you consider yourself to be a positive nihilist?
The only ist I am is a scientist.
Slay.
Try to slap an ist on me. What do you think I am?
Well, there were elements of it.
No, I'll tell you why. Here's why I don't like being isted.
Okay.
Okay?
Let's hear it.
Because the moment you try to ist somebody, mm-hmm. you're putting them in a category.
There's a confine.
That's it. Mm. And by doing so, you will declare for yourself that you know everything you need to know about that person because you've put them in this category.
Right. And you,
even if you just met them, exchange five sentences. Mm-hmm. We've been here 10 minutes, maybe longer, and you want to make me an ist.
Well, I asked if you identify
yeah,
as an
so,
ist.
No, so, yeah. So, and a lot of, are you Baptist? No. So the isting has to stop.
That's fair.
You got to have a conversation with somebody and let them be whatever amorphous shape mm-hmm. they are. And when you fully understand that shape, mm-hmm. you realize it won't fit into any, typically you won't fit into any pre-existing category.
Right.
And then you find out that we're all on a continuum.
Right.
It goes deep. It's like, are you a boy? Are you a girl? Right. Well, maybe I'm somewhere in between today. Mm-hmm. I feel more feminine than masculine. Mm-hmm. All right. So, oh, you want to create a law that prevents me from expressing that? Mm-hmm. And you're the same person who doesn't want government interfering with freedoms? Mm-hmm. That's a weird mixture
right.
of desires. Sense. Like, what are you doing there? Right. All right. Somewhere I read that this is land of the free.
Right.
And somewhere I read there's like the pursuit of happiness is worth fighting for.
I think so.
And you're not going to let me pursue my own happiness. What kind of country are you trying to create?
That's a good point about turning people into a monolith because
right.
once you do, you know, you believe that they adhere to this.
Right.
This,
and
this.
Then it's, you know what it is? It's intellectually lazy.
It is. Because
then you don't have to think anymore about what nuances
how
might
hyperbolic.
Have them no longer fit into that category you put them in.
Right.
Okay. So all that being said, what is it you ask me?
Am I a, oh, yes.
Am I a Pessimistic nihilist? No, what was it?
Opposite. I asked if you were identifying as a positive nihilist because you had some elements of nihilism in there and also was pretty upbeat.
Okay, so in that case, you had to staple together two words.
Okay.
Adjusting the monolith of each to make them two. So if I had to ist myself, I would say I'm a realistic optimist.
Nice. Okay.
Okay, so I'm not, oh, everything will be fine. Don't worry. No, that's not being realistic.
Right.
Realistic optimist, everything will be fine if we do this.
Right. If we come up with a solution.
Yeah, let's try to come up with solutions.
And I believe in our ability to come up with
solutions. So do I. We've solved a lot of stuff in the past.
We do.
And you need more, not everybody, but you need more scientists and engineers in your population. Because we are trained to, when we confront a problem that we haven't solved or can't solve, we say, I'm going to try to solve that.
Yeah.
These are two different kinds of people in the workplace, and we know who they are. One of them is you hand them a task. This is not my job description. I'm not trained for this. That's one kind of person. Another one is, wow, I've never seen that problem before. I got it.
Yeah.
I'll work on it this weekend. I'll get back to you on Monday. These are two completely different kinds of brain wiring. It's the second brain wiring that you need when society confronts problems. There are all these photos of the freeways cluttered by people evacuating hurricane zones. We have photos, especially in Florida. We have long, straight roads. And you see that and you say, really, is that our future, running away from hurricanes? What I want is someone to say, how can we harness the energy of the hurricane? Use that energy to power the electrical needs of the city that it would otherwise destroy.
Yeah. Turn your problem into a solution.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you. Suck that energy out of the hurricane.
That would be awesome.
It doesn't need it. It just wants to harm you anyway. So is anybody thinking that? Maybe. But you can guarantee that everyone in their car saying, buy toilet paper and water bottles, they're not. They're just thinking, let's run away from natural disasters.
Yeah, they're in a survival mode.
Survival mode, not in a fix-it mode, problem-solving mode. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. I see that. I liked what you also talked about how the scientific space is unique in that everything has to be like peer-reviewed. And so if you come up with something, it kind of naturally sorts itself out whether it's true or not.
That's right. So don't ever say, this is true because a scientist said so.
Right.
And this complicates things in the modern era of social media.
Right, with misinformation.
Yeah, because you can get an expert who will say, and this is irresistible clickbait. Oh my gosh. You get someone who has pedigree. Remember, I declined my pedigree at the beginning of this conversation. Get someone with pedigree, and they'll say, the establishment wants you to believe this, but I have the real answers and I'm looking out for you. Boom, you're in.
Yeah.
And they'll say and it's a big industry and there's a face and you're all in with them. They say, I have this novel idea that this is going to be true. Well, it's only true scientifically if it's been verified by others.
Right.
Especially labs that might be your competitors.
Right.
Okay? You can't just get your friends to say, could you verify what I did?
They're like, yeah, that was awesome.
Awesome, yeah, dude. You totally knew. You were rocking that one. So the problem arises when you achieve this scientific consensus. It's not a consensus of opinion. So we don't have a good word for it, but I have to use, it's a consensus of observations and experiments. Once you achieve that consensus, there's 100 scientists who were involved in it.
Right.
And no one of them is going to have a YouTube channel. Right. So are you going to go along with this faceless consensus, bar chart of how you should conduct your behavior, or the one person that says, I care about you, I'm your advocate.
And you can put them on camera.
And on camera, they're usually charismatic. So that's why I don't use my platforms. If I have a colleague, I got this great idea, but it's not, you know, it's not peer-reviewed. It's not vetted. I say, take a walk.
Yeah, well, you're being responsible.
I am not the mouthpiece of fringe. I'm centerline all the way. And somehow centerline or mainstream has gotten a bad word lately. There's a reason for mainstream.
Yeah.
You know what mainstream is? Mainstream ideas are why planes don't fall out of the sky.
Yeah.
Why, just go down the list. Why your smartphone can deliver someone's voice to you while you're walking down the street and that person is 3,000 miles away.
Right.
Right? All of the above. Mm-hmm. It's because we have scientists, engineers, mathematicians, technologists, the STEM, mm-hmm. science, technology, STEM fields empower civilization to be everything the next generation values.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So what do you think about, I recently heard like a term that I thought was interesting that's especially affecting like older demographics, which is conspiracy addiction. And it's like when someone tells you something that's fringe like that and you feel like you're in on like a secret.
Oh, yeah. There's a comfort.
Yeah, you get addicted to the feeling like you know.
It's a feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know something and they're all denying it.
Yeah, and you get a little bit of a chemical rush.
Oh.
And so then you get
addiction affliction.
Yes, addiction affliction.
Yeah.
You go further and further down these pipelines. Yeah. You keep seeking out new information like that.
Right, and you ignore conflicting information.
Yes.
Because it doesn't feed your addiction.
Yeah, so you need a confirmation bias.
Right.
So you end up in these echo chambers.
Probably the most important bias of them all, confirmation bias.
Definitely.
Where you're sure something is true, you ignore the misses and you embrace the hits. Mm-hmm. And then you keep feeding what you think is true. Plus, we live in an era where if you had a crazy idea, you were just the crazy person in town.
Yeah.
Today, you type your crazy idea into a Google search, and you'll find every other person in the world with your crazy idea, mm-hmm. misleading you into thinking that you're onto something.
That it's a good idea.
Right.
And now you have a sense of community.
Right. If you think Earth is hollow, type hollow Earth into Google, and there's a whole community
of
people.
There's a lot of hollow Earth people. Like, it's actually very shocking
right,
how many there are.
Right, right. And we're in a free country. I'm not going to run after them and hit them on the head.
Right.
You should be able to think whatever you want.
But just, you're entitled to disagree.
No, I'm just saying I don't have the energy to chase them down. I would say just don't become head of NASA.
Okay. Yeah, true. Yeah.
Plenty of jobs for you. Yeah. All right. Even the flat earthers. We had Kyrie Irving, a great basketball player, and he... A big flat earther.
Really?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
No, he's retreated a bit. He admitted that he fell into a YouTube rabbit hole. He admitted that. Because YouTube then feeds you more of what
more
you just.
Yeah, more related content.
But all I'm saying is, he's a basketball player.
Right.
So
somewhat innocuous for him to.
Right. As long as he doesn't try to become head of NASA. Mm-hmm. Plus, basketball courts, last I checked, are flat.
So
it's just fine.
He's in his lane.
He's in his lane to think, basketball courts are not curved, right? They're as flat as a leveler can give you. Mm-hmm. And so plenty of jobs for you.
Right.
If you want to think Earth is flat or Earth is hollow or if vaccines are going to kill more people than a disease will. If you want to think all of that, go ahead. But if you start ascending to power over others in a position where this misinformation undermines very long and hard-earned objective truths about the world, that's the beginning of the unraveling of civilization.
Yeah, that's true.
And we just move back into the cave because that's where you're otherwise headed.
We do move back into the cave. And historically, that is one of the tenets of the rise to fascism as well.
Oh, yeah. In fact, this whole fascist thing, I remembered, I'm the exact age where everyone who taught me was alive during the Second World War. Mm-hmm. So they remembered fighting fascism and what it meant. And I kept thinking to myself, how is it possible for an entire community of people to just rise up and support strong man, fascist leader. How's that even possible? They must not. What? How's that even? It was so clearly wrongheaded for the future of civilization. And everyone knew that. But as people are dying off, fewer and fewer people were alive during the Second World War. And now I'm watching people who are attracted to the cult of leaders rather than whether they're, say, objectively true things. And I said, wow, that's exactly what happened 70 years ago.
Yeah.
There was a charismatic leader, and you can't help yourself.
Yeah.
You just want to follow. And they'd say nice things about you.
Yeah.
You say, you're great.
You're
and,
awesome.
And they're bad.
Yeah.
And they're coming after you. Well, protect me. Mm-hmm. And then I see that's how that happens.
Yeah.
It's a susceptibility within us.
It is. Everybody is susceptible to cult mentalities, actually.
Yes!
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
And I saw Dune 2.
Oh, was it good?
Dune 2.
I'm excited to see
That's
it.
A different conversation.
Okay, okay, okay.
I have some issues as a scientist. Okay. There's a big worm. Great worm. Best
Great
cinematic
worm. Best worm.
Creature ever. Okay. Best ever. Better than Godzilla.
Heck
better,
yeah.
Better. It, worm versus Godzilla. Worm wins.
I would watch that.
Okay.
Worm versus Godzilla.
There's no question about the big worm. Is going to yeah.
Sandworms?
Worm, the sandworms. Okay. But they're attracted by rhythmic thumping. Mm-hmm. Into, so even if you walk on the sand, that's rhythmic. Mm-hmm. They'll hear that and then they'll come and eat you. All right. And so they have ways of, the sand people have ways of attracting them.
Yeah, the Fremen with the sand thumpers.
Yeah, the Fremen, they have these sand thumpers. But I just want to say, you cannot thump sand.
Elaborate on that.
Have you ever tried to thump sand? It does not work.
Because it just...
But in the movie, they had this thumper and the Dolby sound made the sand go thump.
Right, because I guess wouldn't, if you, okay, I've never actually really thought about that.
Have you, how much time you spend on beaches?
A decent amount.
Good. Yeah. So, have you ever been really close to the sand?
Yeah.
And things get really quiet down there?
Yeah, it's very quiet.
Because sand absorbs sound. It doesn't transmit sound. It is the worst environment for you to declare that sound is going to transmit from one place to another. It is the most acoustically absorbent material you could possibly surround yourself with.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it would have made more sense if it was water or something.
Water? Yeah, so that would be, so if they did correct science.
Yeah.
When was the novel written, in the 50s or 60s?
Yeah.
Water, because whales communicate through great distances.
Huge distances.
So if it was, instead of a sand planet, it was a water planet. But then they did that movie that was Waterworld and it flopped.
Oh, so, yeah, they did. I forgot about Waterworld, actually. It did flop.
But you can have a water worm. You can have all kinds of creatures that would be more sort of realistically imaginable. But anyhow, that's my issue. But why did I mention Dune? I was going to say something about
How did we get on Dune?
Why you send me on these offers?
It's your
fault.
We're just having too much fun.
It's
my fault. It is, though.
All right. I was going to say, I don't remember what I was going to say.
What were we talking about prior? Oh, we were talking about fascism.
Yes. In Dune.
Yes.
Dune is 20,000 years into the future.
Right.
Plus or minus. Mm-hmm. And they're like fascist leaders.
I know.
And like kings and...
They have an oligarchy.
Yeah. And one is an oligarchy, and then others are just kings.
Yes.
Okay.
Straight monarchy.
Straight monarchy. And there's there's religious prophets.
Yes.
And I thought to myself, this vision does not bode well for the future of democracy.
Yeah, no, that's true.
No one is imagining democracy.
In the future.
In the future.
And then, well,
maybe it's a flash in the pan.
The Bene Gesserits are like an interesting, pretty like sort of realistic thing where they're like quietly moving the needle. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's right. So But none of it is democracy.
No, none of it. That's actually.
Let's take a vote and then do what we all want.
Yes.
Said no one ever.
Said no one ever in Dune.
Or in a future movie, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
It's always kings and.
At the very least, there's always some sort of like galactic militia trying to patrol.
Yeah.
So there's like space police.
Yeah.
At the very least.
Yep.
That's like the most organized we get outside of like a fascist monarchy.
Right. So this doesn't bode well. So maybe democracy is a rare moment in the history of civilization that we are currently enjoying.
Oh, I hope not. Neil, maybe we should make a show about a space democracy in the future.
But plus, in the book, there's a chapter on conflict and resolution. Mm-hmm. The original title of that chapter was Republicans and Democrats.
I see why you.
Then I said, no, it goes deeper than that.
Yeah.
It's conflict and resolution.
Yeah.
It's deeper. And it has to do, a big part of that chapter is tropes.
Yeah.
Tropes are intellectually lazy.
Yeah. That's, okay. You're right.
Okay.
Right.
What is it? Oh, I'm liberal and conservatives, they're all anti-science.
Right. Which is actually, from what I've experienced with a lot of people I've met at Stanford, very mixed bag politically.
But that takes more brain energy to think of a mixed bag.
Yeah.
But so yes, climate change denial sits squarely as a political platform within the conservative movement.
Right, it's one of the pillars.
No doubt about it. And so, but you have liberals lobbying these accusations on the conservatives. However, deep within liberal enclaves, you have crystal healers,
right.
Feather energy people, chakra realigners. You have most astrologers. You have people in denial of GMOs. You have people who and they were the OG vaccine deniers.
I was going to say that.
OG!
Actually, yeah.
OG vaccine deniers were in the liberal party to embrace all of those homeopathic medicines.
Yes.
To embrace all of that, which sits squarely in the liberal world, you have to reject some or all mainstream science that addresses those topics.
That's true.
So a liberal can say the conservatives are anti-science, but what they really mean is they're anti-science related to climate change.
Right.
But they cannot take the high road and say they're anti-science and we're not.
Right.
Can't do that.
You're just
cannot
science in different ways.
Do that.
Yeah.
Correct. And so that's a trope. Yeah. Another trope is conservatives will say we're family values.
Right.
And those low moral liberal, you know, leftists will pause. What do you mean by family value? Like the nuclear family? Is this the marriage?
Yeah,
2.5. Now 1.8 children.
Oh, it's 1.8.
Yeah, it's not over 2. Yeah,
that makes sense economically.
I think we drop below 2. But anyhow, whatever. Call them 2 because you can't have 0.8 kids with the 2-car garage. Is that really? You're all for that?
Mm-hmm.
Then why is it that in 3 categories, divorce rate, out of wedlock births and teen pregnancies, none of which point to stable family values.
Right.
The leading states in these parameters are red states.
Right. So you would think that if you're going for a traditional nuclear family,
and these are your people, it would be the opposite of that. And you know what state has the lowest divorce rate?
What state?
Massachusetts.
Love
which
that
is
for
which is the most perennially blue state there ever was.
Consistently.
Yes. And if you do the top 10 of each, the blues are dominate in the lowest divorce rates, the reds dominate in the highest teen pregnancy in the top 10, highest teen pregnancy and highest out of wedlock births and divorces. So they might want to have that value,
right.
But you can't declare that your people have it and the other folks don't.
Right.
This is my only point.
That's a good point.
So in that chapter, I'm just, as a scientist, I'm analyzing information.
Mm-hmm.
Here's another one. Conservatives say taxing is bad.
Right.
You're going to tax and spend.
Stop taxing the rich.
Okay. Well, here's an interesting fact. If you rank states by who receives the most amount of money from the government relative to how much tax they pay,
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Those states are dominated by red states in the top 10 recipients of tax money.
Interest. Is it because of welfare programs?
Whatever it is, okay, I'm just saying that if you want to drop taxes, go ahead.
Right.
You will be hurt by it more than California and New York, which are net tax-paying states.
Right, that's true.
And they're both blue, of course, mm-hmm. but they're net tax-paying states. So more revenue raised from those two states goes to other states mm-hmm. than back to those states themselves. So this is not – you don't need to be an astrophysicist to even ask those questions.
Right.
But if you're just sitting there lazily in your tropified world – saying mm-hmm. this is liberals are this and conservatives are that, mm-hmm. and you're so content in it and you're going to have that Thanksgiving dinner fight over it.
Right.
No, take a step back. Or dare I say, read the damn book.
Right, no, because the book, you say that actually the reality is we all have much more in common than we
yes,
have different.
Yes, we do. Or the boundaries you put around others, the isting that you do, you realize that people spill out of those boundaries and you have overlap.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you said in common.
Yes.
And there's more in common there than you want to admit.
Yes, want.
Because the tribalistic ways are so satisfying to you.
Mm-hmm.
Are you with us? If you're not, then you are
the enemy. You're against us.
There it is.
I have a question because you briefly touched on this very briefly. Astrology.
Okay.
First of all, what's your zodiac sign?
So if it was as effective as they say, mm-hmm. you should just figure it out.
Okay, Libra. Was I right?
You are exactly right.
I knew it. You know why? You're balanced and logical. No, I looked up your birthday.
Yeah, exactly. I once taught a class at the Hayden Planetarium, evening class for adults, and someone in there at the end said, I got a level with you. I cast horoscopes, and I just wanted to learn more about astronomy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great. That's fine. And so she said, you know, I can cast your sign. And I said, really? Okay. And she said, well, what's your sign? And then I asked her, well, if you're really into this mm-hmm. and you've had me for 12 classes or 15 classes, you should know the sign. If all this works the way right. you say, if it's so inevitable.
It should be obvious.
It should be obvious.
Yeah.
She said, okay, you're a Cancer. And I said, no. So, okay, a Taurus. I said, no. And then like 8 signs later.
It's like halfway through.
No, more than halfway.
More than halfway.
Yeah,
yeah,
8 is more than 6
yeah,
or 12.
Than six, yeah.
Okay. So it was like the 9th guess. She said, you must be a Libra then. And I said, yes, a Libra. I knew it.
You're like, no, you didn't.
Okay. So here's what's going on there. Okay. So I've done this experiment. I invite you to do it. If you're in front of a group of a big group of people,
mm-hmm.
pick a well-read horoscope for that day mm-hmm. in a magazine or the app or whatever. Pick one at random and read it to the audience and say, whose horoscope did I just read?
And everyone's going to
2/3 of the hands will go
yeah.
up. And they say, okay, for those who you are certain I didn't read your horoscope, okay, no, of those how many of you are certain I was not your horoscope?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll raise their hand. And then you tell them, and in almost every case I've done this, people were certain it wasn't theirs, it was some of theirs.
Yeah.
And of course, it's not
most
all of
people's.
The, most of it can't be.
Right.
Okay, at most it's gonna be a 12th.
Right.
So the point is, that's another confirmation bias going on.
Mm-hmm.
You ignore everything in the horoscope that does not apply to your life.
Right, so.
And you see the stuff
cherry
that does. You're gonna find money on the thing.
And you're like, I am gonna be super rich. Be super rich and super hot.
No, but if you didn't find the money, you ignore that. But if you happen to find money in the couch cushion yeah. that morning.
Like it predicted it.
It knew.
Yeah.
So it's mostly harmless
mm-hmm.
and people like it.
Mm-hmm.
It offloads their responsibility and accountability to events in their own lives. So I think it's a little bit cowardly.
You think it's cowardly?
Yeah, it's too strong a word. I think it's a
tropey.
Is there a softer word than cowardly?
It's
timid.
Timid.
Timid. It's. I'm not going to take control over my own life. Because I think the universe is controlling it.
Right. So you can just kind of sit back.
Yeah, it's this happened because it's in the stars.
Right.
Okay.
For good and bad.
Now, I am in J-Lo's latest movie.
Are you in J-Lo's latest movie?
Yes, I am.
Did you enjoy the experience?
No, I don't think about it that way. I just said, did I serve the interest of the audience? And was I effective? Okay. I was invited to play Taurus.
Okay. Oh, right. Oh, yes, because she has the Zodiac.
She's all into the Zodiac.
Yeah, I forgot. I saw clips of that on TikTok.
I was invited to play Taurus. And I looked at the script and I said, I'd like to make some adjustments.
Did
but
you?
They weren't many, but because I'm in the spirit of what they're trying to achieve, I'm not going to undo where they're
the
coming from.
They've done.
But I was able to slip in, if you see it.
I will have to watch it now.
This is me now. By the way, she and I have some common roots from the Castle Hill section of the Bronx, New York. And there's a scene where you see her at the Castle Hill subway station. So I grew up, my earliest memories are the Castle Hill housing projects. So it's way over in the side of the Bronx.
My family is originally from the Bronx as well.
Bronx in the house.
Yeah. I didn't grow up in the Bronx, but like my grandma and like my mom and my, there was like four generations that all lived in one house up there. And it burnt down. So that's the only reason.
Wow.
I've never lived there too.
Wow.
But okay. We have deep roots in the Bronx.
You might have been born in that house. If the house had stayed.
That's what I'm saying.
So I'm there, and so there is an arc, and I don't think I'm using selection bias here.
Okay.
I saw an arc in the storytelling from her completely believing astrological matchmaking suggestions, learning that they did not serve her well.
Interesting.
Because she has these failed relationships that had previously been informed by her trust in astrological. And so by the end, she starts rejecting these external forces and says, I am in control
and
of
does
my
it work?
Own life.
Does it work out better?
Well, that's the claim because she's now... Ben Affleck.
That makes sense. Okay, so it
and she's saying it has come full circle, and she has made her own decision about who she needs to be with.
So it is based like loosely off her own personal life.
Yeah, this is me now. It's part 1980s MTV music video, and part biopic.
Cool.
And part The Bachelor.
I love that.
Yeah, equal parts all three.
Do you know, so like...
So my only point is, if I move the needle just a little, I'm happy for that. And again, it's mostly innocent, but it was fun playing the astrological character because I had a big Mount Olympus-style robe, and we're all in a circle, and we're looking down into this pit where Earth is. Earth is down there. And we're all bickering about... her life, right? Look at her now. She's going to try to hook up with that guy. You know, we warned her about that last time.
Right.
Maybe I should go down there and tell, no, look what happened last time you went down. It was even worse. It's very fun bickering. It was not just high and mighty, powerful astrological figures. Like we're all there just trying to make a better Earth.
Okay. This leads me to my last question for you since we're running out of time. But since you know that you view the world through a very scientific lens.
Oh, yeah, everything.
I was wondering, does that inform your opinions on romantic relationships? Are you an opposites attract kind of guy, like the North and South Poles? Or does it affect you in any way, shape, or form?
I have a more nuanced perspective.
Okay.
If I may.
You may.
So, this notion of opposites attract... If that were the case, why is everyone on the dating app trying to find people who are similar to them? If opposites attract were a deep truth about human relations, then the app would find the most opposite person they could possibly find for you. But they don't.
Right.
That's not what they do. In the first encounter, you like that too, or I like that too. Let's do that together. Okay. So I have a more nuanced view of that, which is, if I'm going to spend my life with someone,
right,
I want to be able to learn from them. And if they're exactly like me, I'm not going to learn a damn thing.
That's true.
So I value enough overlap so that you can share things in common, like off the bat. Mm-hmm. But enough differences so that you can explore each other's interests and desires and then live a life of exploration together.
That's beautiful, Neil. I love that, actually. I feel the same way.
This year, I will celebrate my 36th year of marriage.
Congratulations. Yeah. That's amazing.
And there's a lot of that happens. There's enough different about my wife.
Yeah.
For goodness, she grew up in Alaska, and I grew up in the Bronx.
That is okay? Very different.
Yeah, that's kind of different. Yeah. That's kind of different. So a lot comes out. I visited her folks up in Alaska. That was fun for me. Mm-hmm. I've taken her through the streets of New York. That's I don't know if I call it fun, but it was different.
It was an experience for her.
Experience. So I think you want enough. And for it to work, you have to be perennially curious. Mm. Because if you become ossified in who and what you are, and in your ideas, then your partner will want to show you things and then you'll decline interest in them because you're somehow content in your own little world. That's not going to work either.
Yeah, there's no bonding experience there.
There's no occasion to bond. That's correct.
There's a line from Love, Death, and Robots Zima Blue episode that I love. It's about a little pool cleaner who evolves into a robotic man who then creates art and then explores the universe. And he says that his dream is to commune with the cosmos. He's a little pool cleaner machine.
The machine that goes around and
Okay, so
start that again because I'm thinking of the pool boy.
Okay. That's
the
whole, it's not a pool.
It's a different channel.
Yes, he's a literal cleaner, and the woman whose pool he cleans is a scientist, and she works on him and she builds him up. She's an inventor as well until he becomes this person, and so much time passes that people forget that he was never not a man.
Okay.
And he becomes this artist where he goes out into space and he paints these giant murals in the vacuum of space that are just this one color, Zima Blue. And then eventually he just disappears and he becomes super aloof and no one knows where he is, this cultural icon. And it's because he was getting modifications so that he could commune with the cosmos, go to volcanic planets, swim around, like do all these different things. And then after he's seen what he believes to be everything, he returns back to do a final exposition. And when he comes, everyone's excited. They're like, we haven't seen him in forever. And he sheds all of the extra pieces of him and he becomes a pool cleaner once more.
Is that a happy or sad story?
That's up for you to decide. But I love
it. So in the very first Star Trek movie, Star Trek the movie, 1986 or something, somewhere around there, there's this creature out in space that is consuming all knowledge and it's on a dangerous level and it's coming to Earth and no one knows or understands it. And then it calls itself V'ger.
V'ger.
It just calls itself that.
Okay.
V'ger wants to, okay. By the way, our computers today speak much more human-like than any computer robot of the past, because no one would imagine, it's like, hello, Actually, there's one episode in Star Trek where the computer had emotions and it freaked everybody out. But anyhow, so V'ger. And they go into V'ger because it's this thing. And it has amassed all the knowledge of the universe.
Mm-hmm. By eating it all.
By attaching itself to it and then consuming whatever it needed to know. And was it Kirk? Sees a V and a G-E-R on the side of this thing. And in between, there's corrosion. And so he goes up and rubs away the corrosion, and he sees an O-Y-A.
Voyager
spacecraft. That whose primary mission was to gather all knowledge it can. The ultimate of curiosity is like your pool cleaning robot. All the knowledge of the universe. And that it became so potent that it became dangerous. That's what had happened. And then they figured it out and then they were able to sort of resolve its info-hungry ways. But I have an issue with that too, if I may.
You may.
If it had all the knowledge of the universe, mm-hmm. why didn't it know its own name was Voyager?
That's a good point,
you think?
Neil.
I'm just thinking.
That's a good point.
I don't mean to ruin the movie.
But I'm into it. I like it.
You know, Voyager was a big program we had here on Earth.
It should know about that.
It should know its own freaking name.
It should know its own origin. All right. Thank you, Neil. This was a great episode.
Oh, okay. Thanks for coming through town. Wait, you're based where, you said?
In Indianapolis.
Oh, you're born there and you're based there?
No, I wasn't born there. I was based at, what? Oh, your book. Oh my gosh. Yes. Before we close out, don't forget, everybody should go out and get Neil's book. I personally loved it. I really would definitely recommend it. It was a really entertaining read, and it's a quick read too.
Yes. Paperback. And there's an audio version too, that which I narrated.
Even better.
If you want to.
All my dyslexics out there.
Hear my voice. Book. Yes. And now the universe just for you.
Perfect.
Sure. Behind where? Okay. Mm-hmm. What are you? Are there swans? Like a butterfly, sting like a bee. Step up to the mic to introduce Daisy. That's the name for, followed by the KO. I ain't never seen.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Lowe's knows that more projects mean more tools. For a limited time, new and existing MyLowe's Rewards credit card members can get 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more in-store and online. Don't wait to get the things you need. Get special financing today. Lowe's. We help. You save. Now through August 27th, choose 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more. Offer subject to credit approval and cannot be combined. Minimum monthly payments required. See store or Lowe's.com for details.